Hey guys, welcome to episode 5 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in today's episode, I interviewed Dr. Guy Doran. And Guy is a leading researcher in relationship OCD. He's working out of Herzliya, Israel. He's an incredibly nice guy. He really knows his stuff. It was really fascinating to talk with him about relationship OCD. This area, up to, you know, say 5 years ago, wasn't really researched or known too much about at all. So it's great to see the work Guy and his team are doing. I've read a few of their academic papers and they are really interesting studies. We discuss things like the different types of relationship OCD, like type 1 and type 2. We go into some of the user questions I got asked to ask Guy. He gives some great answers and some great help for fellow sufferers. And he really breaks down some of the new research he's doing, kind of what causes it potentially, and really how to treat it. And we go into things like ERP ERP therapy for relationship OCD. I think you're going to get a lot from this if you're a sufferer. If you're a therapist, I also think you're going to learn a lot about it. Hope you enjoy it. If you enjoy it, please leave a review and rating on iTunes. Or if you have any questions, leave your comments on YouTube for me. Enjoy it. And I'll speak to you soon.
Today's guest is Dr. Guy Doran. Guy is Associate Professor at the Interdisciplinary Center of Herzliya in Israel. Guy is leading the charge in relationship OCD research. He created the site rocd.net and was a co-developer on the mental health app Good Blocks. Welcome to the OCD Stories podcast, Guy.
Thank you.
Pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you here. So our relationship OCD obviously affects a lot of people. I guess more and more coming out of the woodwork, the more that it becomes apparent that that's what it is, because it has been under-researched, I guess, until you and your team got involved with it. There's not a lot of self-help books on it either at the minute. So it's great to have you on and dig deep in some of the questions.
I'm here to help. I hope I'll be able to answer your questions.
No, I'm sure you will. If you can't, no one will. Okay, so I always start with people's personal story, whether that's they suffered with their own mental health issues or kind of just what got you into researching relationship OCD.
Well, basically it was almost by hazard, like by coincidence. Yeah. I was sitting with the co-founder of our research team, Dr. Danny Derby. We're having kind of a peer supervision kind of meeting. And then he started saying, listen, I'm seeing these people that they obsess about their relationships, about the flaws of their partners. And I said, well, yeah, I think I've seen a few of those before. And we started discussing and how different it is from just more common OCD symptoms and how difficult it is to treat it. So basically the idea just came through that, and then suddenly I recalled somebody that I've seen a few years beforehand, that she came to me and she was pregnant and she started telling me about how distressed she was because she feels her husband is not funny enough and that she thinks about that all the time and how he embarrasses her. And it was really kind of looked like an obsessive symptoms and kind of compulsive behaviors surrounding that, kind of checking comparing between her husband and others. And then we kind of started putting just a few people that we saw over the years together, and we said, oh, wait, there's a common factor here, and we don't know what it is. So we have to kind of look for it. It's around relationships, but we don't know much about it. So the first thing we did is went to our best friend, Google, yeah. And we Googled it and put relationship OCD, ROC, and then we realized that people have been discussing it, yeah, you know, a few years beforehand, and just from OCD forums and describing these symptoms. So then we went to the literature and we started looking for examples for that. We didn't find many So we just said, okay, let's just talk to the to people who suffer from this and learn more about it. So we started doing interviews, and then based on that, we kind of more formalized it and developed the assessment measures. And since then, we've been kind of ongoing. So it's more kind of, it came from, you know, the clinic to Google to kind of literature, and then we're kind of working through it.
That's really fascinating. I mean, Google's played a part in, I think, every part of OCD. It helped massively in my recovery and obviously in you starting this research. Yeah. So I guess before you guys started researching it, had no one else researched it or written about it from an academic standpoint?
I haven't seen anyone that looked at it from an academic standpoint. Some people did kind of address symptoms like that as part of a more general phenomena. For instance, Nira Lieberman and Ruvi Dar in 2009, in one of their chapters on a theory that later developed to be a very, I think, very important theory in OCD about proxies, so that individuals with OCD many times rely on kind of external kind of objective kind of ways to measure their own internal states.
Yeah.
In their chapter, they kind of described very similar symptoms about not being sure about love as being an internal state, which is vague and difficult to kind of measure.
Yeah.
So, and that I later found out that,
Okay, that's true. Sorry, go.
That was, so in general, nobody kind of assessed it or measured it or tried to look specifically into kind of RCD and conceptualize it in the sense that we did. So looking on the kind of relationship-centered kind of obsessive-compulsive symptoms, which is more in the focus on whether the relationship is right, whether the person is right. Do you feel people that kind of obsess about their feelings towards their partner and also their partner's feelings toward them? And the other kind of very much related kind of presentation of RCD, the ones that focusing on the flaws of the partner. Interestingly, now we're kind of more investigating even further to see, because we saw that some people carry on kind of ROCD, and afterwards sometimes they kind of start focusing on the flaws of their children. So we kind of expanded in that way, and we were looking also at people that obsess about their relationship with God, whether they are connected enough to God, whether they love God enough, etc. So it's kind of a widening, and we're trying to understand it better. But it's all, you know, it's just started a few years ago, so we're in the beginning of the research. Yeah.
No, it's exciting, and it's funny. Like, I didn't until literally a few weeks ago realize that relationship OCD covered these other areas, including the relationship with God. And and in hindsight, I now see that, you know, I battled actually with my relationship with God for many years, and it probably caused me a lot of pain and turmoil. And it wasn't until I realized that, because before I was linking it to religious OCD, which of course it's not, as you put in one of your papers. But focusing on romantic relationships, because that's kind of where I get the bulk of the questions. You know, I've written quite a few articles on it, and I've got a few videos on YouTube, and one of them is the top ranked for the term relationship OCD. So I get a lot of questions, and kind of I want to focus on that.
So first of all, thank you for doing this and kind of spreading the word. I think your work is really important. It's excellent that, you know.
No, thank you very much. I mean, I did it, I guess, because, you know, when I was struggling with it and realized that other than like your research, there wasn't a lot of self-help type out there. So I wanted to put my personal experience and what I learned from your studies as well. But yeah, hopefully it's helping people. But from, you mentioned there, I believe you call it type 1 and type 2. So type 1 is the rightness of the relationship, and type 2 is like the character traits. Is there any reason why someone would get type 1 over type 2 and vice versa? Because I mean, some, like, I had both, but some people only describe one or the other. Is there any reason why you might pick holes in someone's character as opposed to whether you feel love or not?
Well, we're looking into that.
Yeah.
Like I said, we're kind of I'm drawing a lot of clinical experience and now from research that we see that it's a little bit different with regards to your kind of sense of yourself kind of vulnerabilities, in the sense sometimes the people that start with the partner focused obsession, so focusing on the flaws of the partner, many times their partners, they're very reactive. Their self-esteem is very reactive to the value of their partner and how it's perceived, and he or she are perceived. And they're very sensitive, maybe to kind of to embarrassment, to the feeling of being embarrassed, etc. So kind of intrusive thoughts relating to kind of the flaws of the partner many times start the cycle for them. The ones that are more in the kind of relationship centered, they're more, it's the relationship itself which is more the focus and the rightness. So it's, they have more sensibilities or more vulnerability of self around that. So it's very highly important, the relationship itself and how it is, and any kind of challenge, etc., to the relationship is quite distressing for them, especially because many of them, they also have kind of abandonment issue and attachment anxiety a little bit, so it comes a little bit together. But I have to say that to qualify this and to say that many times what happens is one leads to the other. So if you start by obsessing about the flaws of your partner, many times you then start kind of the obsessive cycle kind of grows to include whether it's right, whether the person is right, whether you feel right, etc. And it kind of leads to a kind of it's a kind of a barrier from feeling the relationship itself. So it kind of becomes a whole issue about the relationship and the partner together. And also the other way, many times if you start kind of obsessing whether the relationship is right, sometimes you look for reasons to say whether it's right or not right, and then you start focusing on the flaws of the partner. So we see a very strong relationship between these two kind of presentations of romantic ROCD. So does that kind of answer your question a
Yeah,
little
no,
bit?
it does. Yeah, that's a really good description and really interesting to see about what you're talking about, abandonment issues. To some loose degree, I felt I somewhat had that, which would explain 100% why I got type 1. I thought it'd be interesting to study if, like, someone who has OCD and, like, social anxiety, how that affects type 2, because that's obviously worrying about often how people interpret you, and then that would then you'd worry about the, yeah.
I think that's a great idea. We're kind of looking at, we're trying to look at that at the moment, and more in the kind of trying to be a little bit more specific than social anxiety, but taking it into consideration, there's a concept which I didn't know about until recently, which is called embarrassability. So what we're thinking now and we're looking at is that people that have the tendency to be embarrassed, and also they have the kind of what we call partner value, contingent self-worth, they'll be more vulnerable to developing partner-focused obsessions and ROCD in general. So, but it's a great idea. I think you're right. It's kind of taps very similar kind of vulnerabilities.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I guess a general question kind of from the community is, I guess, why does an OCD sufferer seek rightness in their relationship? This idea of it feeling right and
I think that's a good question, but I think what happens is, in general, the obsessive cycle in ROCD, what it tends to do is separate you from your own feelings, in a sense. Okay? It leads you to, you obsess about the feelings, but you're not about the relationship, but you don't experience the relationship. And it has a lot of other impacts in different ways as well. But I think the main issue is and that's what we try to do in treatment, is to neutralize this relationship obsessive cycle, to allow the person to really be in the relationship and experience it. And when he stops or she stops obsessing about the relationship, it can see whether the relationship is the one that they want or not.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important for us to separate when people come to the clinic, to separate and say, listen, we're not going to give you an answer about the relationship, whether it's right or not.
Mm.
What we're going to try to do is break basically the obsessive cycle and let you see and experience the relationship itself.
Yeah.
And then you'll see what you want.
Yeah, no, that's a brilliant answer, actually. Yeah, because as soon as you say, you know, you're not going to help them figure out whether the relationship's right or wrong, that helps immediately, because you're stopping that certainty, that need for certainty. Cool, yeah, that's brilliant. So I've got my questions over on the other screen.
Please.
So I consider it under the umbrella of relationship OCD, but from the moment, I guess, I ended, like, my first serious relationship from when I was about 19 to 22. And that was obviously, being that young age, that was very kind of, not traumatic for me, but you know what I mean? It was a big deal. And I think that's why OCD then latched on to my future relationships, because it didn't want me to get hurt again in the same way.
Mm.
I think that's what it is. But from a dating point of view, this never really gets talked about anywhere, even from a sufferer's point of view. But whenever I went on dates, like, the first date would be really good, and then the second date I would be swarmed with anxiety, not on the date, but after the date. Like, feel like I was going to be trapped, like I would be with this person forever if I saw them on another date. And would that fall under the relationship umbrella?
Definitely. We see quite a few clients that go through that cycle. Mm. I think the reason there's not a lot of research about it is because it's difficult to research.
Yeah.
We're really trying to do it and to tap into that. But from anecdotal evidence that we have from our experience in the clinic, I can say that it occurs many times. So a lot of people, until they reach treatment, and normally what we see is they reach treatment after their kind of mid-30s or something like that. Only then they kind of realize that, you know, there's something wrong, and it's not about the other person not being right or the relationship not right. Maybe something about them. But many times they do kind of start a relationship, and then they say, they go out on a date, and then they get exactly the feelings that you're talking. Oh, no, if I keep on doing this,
yeah,
that's it. I won't be able to get out of it, etc. I think it relates to kind of what we call either extreme love beliefs, fear of regret, catastrophic beliefs about relationships, which all kind of lead people to interpret kind of relationship-related kind of concerns in a very extreme way. So, and then it kind of leads to anxiety. So think, for instance, for you, you're going, you're meeting somebody, and then you say, oh no, I will never be able to get out of this. That's it, I'm there. So that's kind of distressing. So it raises anxiety, and you kind of go into these, you may be trapped in these obsessive cycles. So many times having ROCD prevents you from even starting a relationship or from keeping, or maintaining a relationship above a few months. So it does occur, but you're right that we don't investigate it a lot, because there are many reasons that people don't get into relationships, and so we have to kind of work through and differentiate them, and kind of, so it's more complicated, but we're trying to tap into that. But many times it happens. It also happens that people that after they finish with a, for instance, with a relationship, they start, so after the relationship is terminated, they start obsessing about whether that one, the previous one was right.
Yeah.
Okay. That also happens. So we have it all through the kind of, and relating to your first question about being functional, so for OCD being kind of a way to protect yourself, I think that's true many times to a lot of psychopathology, a lot of kind of symptoms that we get. Initially, the belief that, you know, you have to get away from relationship, otherwise you'll be trapped, it was probably functional for you at a certain stage. So, yeah, I don't know. Many people in our clinic describe they've been exposed to other people's relationships that have been really bad. So it could be parental relationships or other relationships. And then you say, oh, well, I have to protect myself not to get to such a relationship. So in a sense, it is kind of a protective kind of belief that you have,
yeah,
that afterwards becomes in different contexts a little bit,
yeah,
not suitable to the new context.
Yeah. Okay, now that's really interesting. It's great to get you saying that, because obviously it's not said around the web or in any literature. So one that I always pick up on, and I noticed in my own life, was I had a distorted view of what love was. You know, I picked up on the whole Hollywood, as they said in the rom-coms, you know, it's blissful and it ends happily ever after, which isn't the case. Relationships are more than just butterflies in the stomach. How have you seen, I guess, from your own real-world experience and from the literature, about how these distorted views affect a sufferer's perspective in a relationship?
First of all, that's another good question. Thank you for that. Yeah, I think the media does impact our views of relationships.
Yeah.
And I think we're looking now, we're showing the individuals, or we're showing them kind of clips of a very romantic view of a scene, and versus a scene of a not, you know, more realistic view, and we're trying to see whether that impacts or triggers particular beliefs.
Yeah.
And what we saw from like correlation of data is that people that view a lot of romantic films, they seem to have a little bit more kind of higher levels of OCD. So the more you watch romantic films, it seems like you have a little bit more. And we know from the literature that what you watch, yeah, impacts how you see things. Okay, so how you perceive relationships, how you perceive love, etc. So I think it does have what you say, this impact about the beliefs you have. So for instance, you can say, if you have an extreme belief, what we call extreme love beliefs, yeah, so for instance, that you have to be euphoric all the time and really be happy with your partner all the time, that will lead you to interpret thoughts about the relationship in a very extreme way. So you'll say, okay, wait, I'm not thinking about her all the time. Or maybe it's not the right relationship, but I feel towards her. So you start kind of the obsessive cycle also begins. So it makes you more vulnerable when you have such beliefs. I think we have to still to kind of investigate it more thoroughly, but I do think that there is a kind of indirect kind of relationship between the way the media impacts our view of relationships, our understanding of the complexity of a relationship, our understanding of emotion. Okay, so if you have the belief about that your emotions should stay the same and they stay the same all the time, their strength and their quality, that will lead you to kind of difficulties around things, including emotions like love, etc., and our OCD.
Yeah.
So that's another aspect that we kind of try to challenge and to work with in when we see people in therapy. So to learn about just the way emotions change over time, and that the fact that they're not consistent and they're not always on the same level or have the same quality, etc. So yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting and good to hear. I no surprise, like romantic comedies are one of my favorite types of film. So it's no wonder I suffered. But yeah, I actually, when I was going through the height of it, I stopped watching all romantic films, which was good, but at the same time, I think I shouldn't have done it because I should have exposed myself to it and dealt with it better, in hindsight. So I kind of advise people to do that now if they can try and sit with it. But that whole, the biggest question I get is people say, I don't have that butterfly feeling in my stomach anymore. You know, I miss that feeling of being in love. And I always express that as that's not necessarily, that's one aspect of love, but it loves this whole array of emotions. It's good, it's the bad, it's the ugly. But yeah, no, that's good to hear. Okay, so this is a user question, someone from Twitter, I believe. So how does someone tell if they have RCD or a bad relationship?
That's the million-dollar question. Well, I think ROCD is very different from just having a bad relationship in the sense that people with ROCD, they're not really in a relationship. In the sense, I mean, in a metaphorical way, they're in a relationship with their own thoughts and they're with their own fears. And you really live within their kind of own obsessions, in a sense. So what we need to so, but what complicates things that many times relationships, the relationship itself is a trigger. Everything almost in the relationship, if you have a ROCD, is a trigger. Every time you have a conflict, that's a trigger. Every time you look at your partner and he does something embarrassing, that's a trigger. Every time that you see a romantic movie, that's a trigger. So you have kind of, oh, like, and then you think, maybe I don't look that way in the eyes of my partner. So maybe I don't really love him or her. So I think it's really important to understand, like we said in, a little bit in the beginning, to the differentiation between assessing the relationship itself and kind of breaking the obsessive cycle. Now, that's why it's very important also to go to a professional that will know how to kind of assess whether it's a more kind of an ROCD type thing or a relational thing. So there are a few things you can look at, but it's when you use kind of an interview, a thorough interview of the relationship, of the history of your relationship, you measure your and you describe your symptoms and their context when they come up. You use objective measures like questionnaires and like more structured interviews, and you can really have a really clear view after that about whether it's a kind of a more relationship dynamic kind of issue or a more kind of an obsessive ROCD kind of issue. Not to say that they're mutually exclusive, yeah? Many times they come together because if one of the individuals have ROCD, that leads to to conflict within the relationship. So it's a complicated, that's why it's such a complicated kind of disorder to treat. So yeah, you have to really go through the motions and do a really good thorough assessment and to see whether you have that. But I think an important way to look is, or if you think about it in yourself, is to see whether you're all the time kind of in your head, you're thinking about it. Everything is a trigger for you, and you're really distressed, and it disturbs your functioning in other kind of in other settings, and yeah, and it takes a lot of your time. I think that's a good cue to go and do an assessment and see what's going on there.
Yeah, no, that's a really good example. And thanks for going into that. That's obviously going to help a lot of people because, as you said, that is the million-dollar question. I mean, for me, like, I'm in a long-term relationship now, and I'm happy in it. I obviously occasionally get the odd intrusive thought, but I know how to deal with it now,
Excellent.
and kind of laugh it off. but even today, I wouldn't say, you know, I'm in the right relationship, because I know as soon as I do that, I'm almost egging OCD on. So it's kind of like I'm content in the relationship, but and I'm happy with it. But what I found with relationship OCD, and as you said about sometimes, you know, not necessarily a bad relationship, but a relationship that needs improvement, and OCD can go hand in hand. It's not always, if OCD is there, it's a perfect relationship. That's not the case. And I think as I came through it, I realized that actually it helped me and my partner develop a better relationship, better communication. We understood what each other liked or didn't like. And because of that, I think we have a lot stronger relationship. So I think in hindsight, you know, to some weird twisted degree, I'm grateful I went through relationship OCD, because I'm a better partner now because of it, and have hopefully a better long-standing relationship.
I think I really thank you for saying that, because that's something that is less said, and I think it's important. When I, with my students, when I talk to them, I tell them, you know, many people, they come to therapy and they come agonizing, and it's a very difficult time for them, but when they start learning to overcome their difficulties, they come out better than they came in. So they learn so much about themselves. They believe in themselves so much more. They understand, in the case of OCD, they understand relationships, they understand themselves, they understand feelings, emotions. They understand the way they think. They're more flexible in the way they think. They're happier in general, I think. So thank you for saying that, because that's a really important point. I mean, having difficulties many times, if you have good treatment, it can really open you up and be a positive experience in the end of the day. Yeah. I mean, I think that's an important thing to say. I know it's, like you said, it sounds twisted, but in a sense, it's, you know, it can really be beneficial for you, in the overall picture, in the long-term picture.
Yeah, Dr. Stephen Hayes?
Yeah.
He mentioned it in the last podcast. He said, you know, he said, if you have mental health issues, he said, you're the lucky ones. Because he said, you're now learning skills that are going to help you live a good life, where most of the public have never had to. And because of that, they live forever with self-esteem issues, confidence issues, all things that we never really say are mental health issues, but they are.
Well, I agree. I very much agree. And I think it's a really important point to stress. Yeah.
Cool. Brilliant. Okay, so this is another user question. I think this is a good one, and I have my own answers to it, but I want to see what you think about it. Is how do they explain to their partner that they're trying their best? So that, I guess the partner already knows they have relationship OCD, but how do they explain to their partner, I guess in times of turmoil, that they are trying their best, they're trying to overcome it?
First of all, that's also a really important question. And I think there are a few things. Not all individuals that have OCD, they share with their partner. So there's some that do, and that has its kind of, influences on the relationship, etc. And some don't, and that has its impact as well. But not all do. So the ones, it's a really, I think it's a very difficult question.
Yeah.
I think it's very individual. The answer is, has to kind of really understand who the partner is and how the relationship and who you are. So it's a kind of a interdependent kind of answer in that sense. I think I would recommend, if the person already, the partner is already involved, which I do recommend if possible, I would kind of join in and bring him to the therapy session for at least one or two sessions, just to kind of explain to them what it is about, what is OCD, okay? And really important, I think, in that way is to stress that it's not about the partner. It's the individual himself that is dealing with these problems. He has this cycle that is sometimes triggered, and it's very important to kind of think how, as a couple, they can deal each time the cycle is triggered, and maybe work together with that. I know that sometimes that's the ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sometimes quite difficult to do that. Sometimes even raising or sharing the problem with the partner can be problematic because they take it on themselves and they start feeling insecure and they start feeling you know, unsure of the relationship, etc. So it's a really, I think it's a delicate question. But I would, yeah, I would share that, I would go through the kind of the explanation of the dynamic of our OCD and how it is about, you know, how we can kind of overcome it, and it comes in waves and it's triggered and it's not related to the other person and etc.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. I like the bit about bringing them to the therapist. I think it's obviously having someone who's trained in it will help the partner, I guess.
I think
feel reassured.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. And it will also think about the confusion the problem the partner has. Yeah. He doesn't go through the therapy that the individual, the client goes through.
Yeah.
So he's kind of a little bit blind to all these processes that maybe you as a client, you really understand more. And so it kind of creates sometimes a very difficult barrier. And I think it can be useful to bring the partner to therapy for at least a few sessions and kind of understand it more.
Yeah, no, that's great. Okay, so another question I get a lot, and I answer it the best I can, but is how can ERP be applied to relationship OCD? I guess things like imaginal exposure could be used. Is there anything else that...
There's a whole many, many variations that can be used. What we use it for, we try to look at it as kind of behavioral experiments. So we devise a kind of behavioral experiment to a particular kind of beliefs people have or the ways that they see things, and then kind of see how it challenges their basic extreme belief or their initial beliefs. So it could be one behavioral experiment could be, you know, for people who believe that they have to think all the time about their partner, and etc., is to tell them, okay, now let's go, let's try and do that. Let's try and go home and think about your partner all the time, all the time. Just try to think about it. Try to think about what do you expect will happen? Okay, and then you can kind of challenge the idea that the more you think about the partner, the more you know you love them, or the more you the better you are together, or the more you enjoy life, or the more, you know, the more positive affect you have, etc. So all these kind of behavioral experiments can be set up by the client and the therapist to, for your own kind of, or the specific beliefs, which is a core belief for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of try to be very specific about these things and identify each belief and each underlying kind of core vulnerability and challenge that. So another example would be, okay, and for people that believe that they have to monitor their own feelings all the time to make sure that they love their partner. So you can create a kind of behavioral experiment and say, okay, what do you believe will happen if you all the time you monitor your feelings, or you try to monitor your feelings, or all the time you try to check if you're happy? What do you think will happen? You'll be happier, you'll be less happy, etc. And then kind of learn about, in a more experiential way,
yeah,
and you learn how to see the world a little bit differently and more flexibly with regard to your beliefs.
Mm. So that's that act of sort of, I guess, getting them to be the almost the scientist or researcher in their own life is helping them diffuse from their thoughts, which I guess the first step to.
Yeah, I think it what it does, it kind of helps them challenge their own beliefs about things. Okay, so it helps them challenge the belief that, you know, if you monitor your feelings, you'll be more sure about your feelings. Yeah, and what happens in the end many times is not exactly that. Okay, so it's a belief like that. Or any other belief that you kind of put up, you can kind of, we use the behavioral experiment to kind of challenge that or kind of restructure it and reconceptualize things.
So that's really interesting. Because I think it's obviously because relationship OCD doesn't necessarily have any physical compulsions in a lot of cases. They're always in the sufferer's head with reassurance seeking. And so ERP is always, obviously it's not, but it's more commonly seen as removing physical compulsions. And that's what I used it for originally, to get rid of all my other areas of OCD.
I think it's, I mean, behavioral experiments and ERP, you can use them for many things. I mean, not only for kind of external behavioral things, but also your thoughts. So you can have the thought of, for instance, the thought suppression kind of behavioral experiment. So you try not to think about things and see what happens, whether you manage to do that. Mm-hmm. Then it challenges the belief that you can control your thoughts and you can avoid thinking about particular things. And it even challenges the notion, for instance, that you can, for instance, a lot of time in our OCD, what happens is that you don't want to think about the flaw of your partner. Okay, so you try really hard not to think about it, and then what happens, of course, is you think about it more, and then you go into the cycle, and the obsession increases. So in a sense, what you do makes you obsess. So it's the mal, or kind of mal. Maltreatment, maltreatment of your own thoughts that kind of leads you to obsess. So you learn about this cycle as well. So these behavioral experiments can be done about the way you think, about the way you feel, about the way you act. So all of these things, and then we use them as a whole to challenge kind of beliefs that you have, perceptions that you have of yourself, of others, of the world, in order to kind of make them more flexible.
That's great advice. So we've got 8 minutes left, so I want to pick out some good questions. So I guess from a practical, like improvement in sufferers' lives, and from your experience, what would you say is one thing or a few things that an RSD sufferer can put into their life today to start making changes or improve?
That's a good one. I think there's a lot of advice. I don't know how practical it is if you don't. It depends. Oh, and that's an important issue. You're right. You know, like almost any kind of symptom that you have in the area of mental health, it's all on a continuum. So you have to. We all have thoughts of many kinds and in different levels, and also obsessions and compulsive behavior. So it's all in a continuum. If you feel like it's really taking over your life, and it's really distressing for you, I would kind of seek a professional help. If it's less than that, I would kind of maybe read a little bit about it, learn about it a little bit more, and kind of try and challenge little things that you think that you can, and kind of and try to if you self-identify all kind of beliefs that disturb you and all kind of perceptions that disturb you, so to challenge them a little bit. So either by self-monitoring, if you have a belief about emotions having to be all the time in a certain level. So just monitoring your your feelings towards somebody else, or your feelings towards towards another object, or even asking people about their feelings about their partner, or you know, just trying to challenge kind of some of the beliefs that you identified in yourself that are significant in your kind of difficulties. I think it's sometimes it's hard to do by yourself if you are above a certain level of difficulty, but I guess it's ways that you can kind of quieten your obsessions that you feel that help you without trying to avoid and without trying to kind of I don't know. It's a good question. I have to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah, no, that's some good advice anyway. And I definitely recommend, seeing someone who's experienced in relationship OCD. And unfortunately, they're growing, but there's still not a mass amount of training. But maybe that will become more into CBT training as well.
Yeah.
And ACT training. All right, so a kind of off-the-wall question, but what's been your most astonishing finding, the thing, something that like popped out and you didn't expect that was going to come from the research? Or...
That's a really interesting question. Something that came up that surprised me, also from the clinical experience, is that sometimes people have ROCD, so they're kind of obsessing about whether their relationship is right, whether their feelings towards their partner is strong enough, etc. And also they have obsessional jealousy. So that's something that's kind of, the first time I saw it, I didn't really understand it. So if you're obsessing about whether it's right and whether you love your partner or not, how come you're kind of checking up on them and trying to see whether they're kind of faithful or not, and etc. So that was one of the kind of surprising elements in the phenomena itself. What we're kind of thinking about now is that it may come together for a few reasons. First of all, for something that isn't common to these things. So, for instance, the importance of relationships or attachment anxiety, etc. But we're also thinking now that maybe it's a little bit of the same symptom, but in a different area. So for instance, you may obsess about whether your partner is intelligent enough, whether he's good looking enough, or whether he has some certain aspect of his physical appearance which you don't like. But you may also obsess whether he's a trustworthy person. Okay, and especially in the domain of relationships. So it's, in a sense, maybe it comes together because it's the same type of process.
Yeah.
So it's another kind of flaw that we obsess about, in a sense. So that's kind of the way we're thinking. But that was a very kind of a surprising thing for me that I didn't really kind of expect to see before.
Yeah, no, that's actually interesting. Okay, so last question is, you've got a billboard in a busy area of Israel, and it can say anything on it. What would you want it to say? Doesn't have to be OCD related.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I think... yeah, more about if you're unhappy, try to find ways to kind of improve your well-being.
Yeah,
I think that would be a really important. Don't just let it be and just continue suffering or being distressed.
Yeah, that's really good actually, because a lot of people do just sit among their pain.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, that's brilliant. How can people get involved with your research? How can they find out more about you and the work you and your team are up to?
Well, first of all, through this podcast, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Yeah, and, A second, we have ROCD.net, which is the website that we have, and we try to kind of update as much as possible. So that's a good way to go in. There's all the papers that we took, that we wrote about this out there. I personally don't give Skype sessions, but my colleague, Dr. Danny Derby, sometimes gives Skype sessions for discussion. You can write emails to us. We get hundreds of emails every year. We have on the website, we have some kind of research. You can go into a link for research that we kind of try to have initial ideas about things that we're developing. That's about it, I think.
Brilliant. Yeah, I'll put all that information in the show notes on theocdstories.com. But yeah, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. There's some great advice that I've found massively interesting, and I know it's going to help anyone who's really struggling at the minute with relationship OCD and OCD in general, I'm sure. I'd definitely love to get you on for a part two at some point to go deeper into this.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do it. And really, I want to thank you for kind of taking this upon yourself and spreading the word. And I think it's so important to disseminate the knowledge and for people to know more about it. Because one of the biggest problems of ROCD is exactly that, that people confuse it with relationship with dynamic difficulties and people don't know about it. And so in that way, either they get wrong treatment or they don't get treatment at all, or they don't know what they're having. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So thank you. See you.
Cool. All right. Speak soon.
See you later.
Yeah.